Welcome to F4 Podcasts. With me is Ashank Desai, one of the pioneers of the software industry in India, the founder of Mastek, one of the founders of NASSCOM, a philanthropist who set up public policy institutes both in IIT Bombay, the top Indian Institute of Technology campus institution in India, and in Indian Institute of Management, IIM Ahmedabad, the top management school in India. So welcome, Ashank.
Thanks, Atul. It is great to be here with you and looking forward to chat with you.
Thank you, sir. Ashank, let's talk about your beginnings. You are not someone who was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. In fact, you have an extraordinary family which contributed a lot to society and to the country. So why don't you tell us the story from the beginning, from your aunt, perhaps?
Sure. That's very, very interesting story, shall we say. I'll take you back to early 50s. And here I was born in Goa, and whole fight against Portuguese was very much alive in Goa.
Just so that our listeners know, because some of them in Berlin or London or New York, and especially San Francisco, may not know that India was not only colonized by the British, but also by the Portuguese. And indeed, other European powers were also trying to rule India. There was a Dutch East India Company, there was a French East India Company. And the Portuguese were the first to the party. In fact, in 1498, Vasco da Gama had come to India. In fact, I was born in Vasco da Gama, ironically, Goa. And and Goa was a Portuguese colony till 1961, 14 years after
India's independence.
The British had left.
Yes. So everyone was there saying India should take interest in Goa to evict out Portuguese. And here was a young girl, maybe teenager or maybe just 20s, trying to fight Portuguese, who was my mother's sister. And she joined other Indian socialists, as they used to call that time, Ram Manohar Lohia, and there was this whole gang who were fighting and creating an atmosphere for Portuguese to leave. So she joined them and started doing various things. Obviously, Portuguese found her out and arrested. And the judge was there, who was again a Portuguese guy, who asked, "Oh, lady, you are young. You should be doing some studies and not all this. So I will leave you. But what will you do?" So she said, "Sir, thank you, but I will do the same thing if you leave me." And that was enough for her to get a 19 or 18-year sentence to be in jail. And she, with many other ladies, actually, that time, brave ladies who fought against Portuguese, were in prison for 7-8 years, I think. And then Portuguese left them. They thought they could do nothing with them. And my uncle, again, was similar involved in against Portuguese and so on. And my father and my mother also were involved in some form with the Portuguese struggle. So that's a story, Atul.
That's a great story. And apparently, as a two-year-old, you helped the Portuguese arrest your uncle.
Yeah, that's another story by itself. Because they asked me a question when they came to arrest him in my uncle's place. And I, like any other honest small kid, said, "Yeah, he was here in this house last night." That was a good hint for them to run after him and arrest. So my uncle never pardoned me for that.
Hey, oh, there we go. So yeah. How does a boy who is growing up in a family persecuted by the Portuguese get an education?
Yes, that was a story which was unfortunately long in my life, in the sense that my father passed away when I was 2 years old. And Portuguese, of course, were after our family, as I told you. So it was difficult to live in Goa. And my mother, of course, young lady with a son, had then decided to go to a place called Dadra Nagar Haveli, which also Portuguese colony, but got liberated in 1955 or 54 time. And there were many Goans there. So I had to move, obviously, with her. She was not so well educated. She got a job which was giving her 130 rupees salary. I still remember that number, monthly salary. It may be worth 50 times more today, but still, it is a small salary by any standards. And I used to end up studying in schools of what we call Adivasi or Aboriginals, Indians. And many of them were married fellows at 16 year old, and they used to study with me, 7-8 year old, and my school didn't have a blackboard or a place to sit and so on. So it was a very tough life.
So you sat on the floor?
Sat on the floor with one teacher teaching all the subjects and so on.
And did you have a classroom or did you sit outside under a tree?
No, fortunately we had a classroom, but it was kind of a make-believe classroom. But yes, I do remember sitting also under a tree for some times. My teacher used to take us out and sit and also teach there. But yeah, so it was a bare minimum school. I don't think anybody should go in such a school. Better than not going to school, of course. But the point I'm making is I had a very tough, difficult life first up to 7th standard in such school. And then went to Goa when Goa got liberated in 61, as Atul told all of you. And again, ended up in a school which was not best of the best schools because they saw my background in the school and they said, you know, you have not got best of the education. So it was difficult life.
And in Goa, your fellow students were drinking Feni, a local drink, and
My neighbors.
Actually. Your neighbors. Yes. Okay.
What used to happen is I ended up in a place which was a village near the main city of Goa, which is called Panaji, which is the capital of Goa.
Yes, indeed.
And I and my mother ended up in a small village where all we had surrounding us were fellows who used to be laborers and nighttime drink a Feni, which is a well-known drink in Goa. And they would drink and start abusing their spouses and children and so on and so forth.
Wife
beating was quite common. And I used to hear the shouts and so on where in my surroundings. And I used to stay with my mother alone. So those were very difficult days and ended up being that way, staying in loneliness because I used to come from school and then lock my door and sit inside and study and listen to nice music era of that time called the
Golden Era of
Bollywood.
You're still a singer.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. Somebody can, with a captive audience, I can definitely sing something. So, but those were the difficult days of life in the sense, very little social life, Atul. The point I'm making was, I was brought up in an era in a situation where I had very, very little social life. It was my lonely life with, little bit of social life in school, of course, but not much.
And you ended up getting an engineering degree. You ended up not just getting an engineering degree, but getting to IIT, the top institution in the country. So that's extraordinary. How did you manage that?
Oh, so that is also another story, actually, I must tell you. Things happen in your life with very interesting situation. I came to answer an exam of IIT to Mumbai from Goa. And I was living at a place far away from where IIT is situated. And one had to take a train to reach there. Being new to Mumbai, didn't keep any buffer of time, etc. I thought trains will reach in time and I'll go. I enter the train, it finishes one station It's a suburban train, and it stops there. It's called Central Railway, which had very bad reputation of punctuality. What do I do? Exam is there. I have to answer questions. And it was rainy season, early June, I think. So I jumped out of train and started walking on the railroad to get to the nearest station where I could then get a taxi. And I had very little money with me, but somehow walked for, I think, 15, 20 minutes, got a cab and reached the exam. And I was late almost by, I think, if I'm right, 30, 40 minutes. So the guy asked, do you want to attend this? It's too late. So I said, anyway, I've come all the way. I'll attend. And fortunately, I passed. So when I got a Distinguished Alumnus Award in IIT many years after that, I was jokingly saying, I hope they don't have kept my paper still, because I am not sure whether I had passed the exam or somebody's mistake I got in. So I said, please don't check my paper. I am not sure whether I passed. But anyway, those were the stories. I was lucky and got into IIT, where I really understood what competitiveness means in India. I used to feel good that I stood first, etc. But I saw beside me guys who were topper at India level, bright students with a bright minds. That really was something which helped you to grow yourself. That's very important.
The so, company you keep.
IIT teaches you your best faculty, but what is most important is you work with guys who are world class.
Yeah.
And you compete with them, you better start doing well. Mm. It raises your standard. And that is invaluable.
Indeed. I mean, after all, we are who we meet and not just what we eat.
Yeah, of course. More in India.
So, excellent. So you obviously do well in IIT, and walk us through the time after your graduation and the time when you begin your first company.
Yeah, so that is a story, interesting story of those times, actually. As I always tell you, Atul, I lived a dream. Dream of Mastek, my company, and dream of IT industry. What happened was I joined a well-known engineering company after IIT, but my mind was not in engineering. I realized I have to do something else.
And what did this company do?
It's a well-known company called Godrej.
Oh, yes.
And
huge. Even today.
Even today, it is big. Yeah. And I was a design engineer for refrigerators because that was my specialization.
Mm-hmm.
So I joined them, worked there for 2 years, 3 years. And somehow I felt, I don't think I can make my life in this.
Mm.
I used to read Peter Drucker, if you have heard.
Of course.
Well-known.
Yeah. Management guru.
Guru. I read his book called Management and I realized this is what I want to do. And then I got admission into IIM Ahmedabad, which is, as you know, number one school in the country with Harvard Business School Association it started with. So went to IIM and that was a turning point in a way again, because there I met my colleague founder members who were my classmates. And we decided in classroom itself that we will start something after we pass out. Now everyone talks about these days, but I'm talking of 45 years ago.
Which year was this?
This was in 78.
Wow, this is the Janata Party.
Yes.
Ruling the country.
Yeah.
1977 to 1980. Indira Gandhi had imposed the emergency before that. She had amended the constitution, arguably with dubious means, and declared that we were a socialist country. In fact, she had inserted socialist and secular into the preamble. So the zeitgeist was certainly not in favor of entrepreneurship, Ashank.
Yes, surely so. Particularly the kind of career, the degrees that you have in hand, everyone says, what's wrong with this guy? He should be joining Citibank or American Express.
Yes.
And, have a lifetime career.
Like Ajay Banga, become president of the World Bank.
Yeah. he was junior to me later at IIM. But the point I'm making is my mother said, what is wrong with you? What is this you are trying to do? Remember, we started doing this work when we were in second year at IIM. And fortunately at IIM Ahmedabad, you know, people respected you when you went out as a student. So we could go to the best of the best entrepreneurs and the industrialists and meet them and ask them about our venture, which was in software industry.
How did you go from designing refrigerators to software? Now, this is, for me, the multi-billion dollar question.
Okay. Okay. Let it be safe. So the point was, what happened really was, I have to go back to IIT again for that. What happened was, we had to do some project in the second year. And then there was a guy who was sitting and doing something on punching cards. So I asked him, what is he trying to do? Remember, those were the early 70s and you didn't have any programming kind of terminal and all. You had to punch your cards and then run them in a batch format in a computer where isolated one, you have to remove your shoes to come in, go in there. So he said, no, this is computer which allows you to do things very fast. So I said, I have a problem to solve. Can you help me? So he said, yeah, I have some program which if you use, you will able to get a better results out of your projects. So that was my first instance of computer. And then when I went to IIM, of course, those were early years of computers. PCs were not there by that time, but mini computers were there. And IIM had installed mini computer and they were teaching us on computer programming and management information systems. And I liked that subject and then realized that this is something where I could make my career and particularly I could make my company easily because it did not require any investment of money, but only brain power. So that was a kind of interest in computerization and computers and its nature that required not much investment. We all being from middle class, very little money, decided to get in there.
So your co-founders were from IIM Ahmedabad.
Yes.
But I remember you told me last time when I was in Mumbai, you of course live here, that one of your co-founders came from IIM Calcutta. Yeah. So how did you run into that chap?
Okay, you have a good memory, I must say, Atul. I told you this long time back.
I listened carefully.
Looks like I should be very careful with you, what I say. But on the serious side, the point I'm making is it so happened that after we started a company, we had a customer in an advertising agency called Rediffusion. And this person was working there as a head of IT and he liked us as a supplier to them and he said, I would like to join you. And so he was not our classmate, yes, but he came 3 years after we started. In 82, he joined in
85. The Asian Games were on in 84.
Yeah, Asian Games were in 84 and I still remember trying to write a COBOL program when I was listening to the commentary of Asian Games. I still remember that particular moment. I don't know why, but good that you reminded me.
So this is also a time when the outsourcing of data processing begins.
Correct.
Is that so?
What happened was at that time, data processing was the only way you could do computerization in the sense that you were doing your payroll, you were doing your financial accounting by sending data to a central data processing large computer of those times. And then they will send you output and then you do your payroll and accounting. There was not much computing happening inside the companies themselves. And then came these mini computers, which were easy to kind of install as well as not as expensive when companies started installing them. And then came personal computers, which were still cheaper, and they were connected with these mini computers. And then the whole development of software in company and using them sitting inside the company started. Those were the early days of what you call in-house computing. And data processing as an industry became kind of defunct. And it is very ironical that people have gone back now to the same era, but at a cloud level. Mm. We are doing same thing. All our data, all our processing happens in cloud, which is far away from where we are.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a different thing.
So your first customer, who was your first customer?
Yeah, that's a very interesting story. Our first customer was a multinational, which is well known now by name Procter & Gamble, but they were called Richardson Hindustan in India. And they were interested in using IT. And multinationals were the really forerunners of using IT in the country those times.
And what problem did you solve for them?
Yeah, so that was an interesting problem. They had real problem in the sense that they make what is called as VIX, vapor rub, which is kind of ointment which you apply for...
When you have a cold.
When you have a cold.
Yeah.
And Tonos, which is a cough syrup and so on, which are mostly sold in rainy season. And in India, it's a very heavy rainy season.
The monsoons.
Monsoons, as they
call
it. Of course,
anyone who knows India would know about the monsoons. Kalidas wrote about the monsoons a long time ago, many centuries ago. Meghadutam is all about the monsoons.
Oh, good. I'm happy to hear from you. Yeah, Meghadut is a story of that.
Yeah, so exactly.
That's our
history. Meghadutam literally means the cloud message.
Cloud messenger.
And it's an extraordinary work of literary genius, one of the great achievements of Indian culture. And in modern times, if you're interested in reading this book in English, because I doubt very many of our listeners read Sanskrit, there's a translation by Srinivas Reddy, a very dear friend of mine, which is one of the best translations you can read. But let's go back to your first customer.
Yeah. So this first customer had a problem with this Meghdoot, obviously, because what used to happen is they had a big demand for all their products in monsoon, and they did not have a capacity to make it. And there were a lot of control era, as you know, that time.
Oh, it was the license permit, quota raj. Every bureaucrat wanted a bribe. Someone told me that, running an industry told me that they had to pay off, I'm forgetting, 27 separate people. It was just
and
ridiculous.
And you were penalized for producing more than what your capacity allowed you. Can you believe that?
Your friend, Sharad Kumar Saraf, the president,
I know,
the chairman of IIT Bombay, he mentioned that to me.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah, you were literally penalized. Why are you producing more than what is required? Anyway.
Hey-ho, there we go.
There we go. So they could not produce as much as they wanted because they didn't have capacity and they couldn't increase it. So their choice was to make it in advance. If you make it few months ahead, then you have to pay the cost of inventory, as we call it, because you have to stock. So they had a very complex problem of how to optimize their production planning.
I see. And because there were very many variables.
Very many.
Including the evil Indian Administrative Service.
Yes. Which was difficult to simulate, of course. We were not as good to do that. But there was an interesting problem that we learned at IIM called traveling salesman problem. It is a problem by itself. I will not describe it here. We use
another time. If that sounds very interesting, but let's crack on with your first customer.
The salesman problem is, there are 10 salesmen and there are 10 customers and 10 people are in different places. How to optimize their movement, etc. Anyway, we use that model and solve that problem, and we built one of the first C programs in the country, probably, because the language C just came out in 1980.
Wow.
And I remember one of my colleagues was very so good.
Who? Who was this person?
His name was Vasan. Although
Tamil Nadu?
Yeah, he is from Tamil Nadu and he was again classmate.
Hmm.
Though he kind of later left, and there was another person called Sundar who mm-hmm. was also tech buff.
Mm-hmm.
So they all kind of involved in writing those programs, and we wrote programs in a computer which was lying in their laboratory. It was not their main computer. They said, I can only give you this computer. So we wrote something there, and they produced a production plan, and we were given bonus. That was the beginning. It was so heartwarming and so kind of feeling good that we could make a difference to a company of mm. that size mm-hmm. at that time. And that was a beginning. And from there, what we felt, Atul, and that's most important, we felt that we could build solutions
mm.
to solve business problems. So the name of our company was Management and Software Technology. That is the way we christened that name.
And that is why Mastek.
So that became too long. So when we went IPO, we reduced it to Mastek. So
Mastek, that is
So Mastek comes from using technology for solving management problem. Looks very trite now, but not in 1980s when there was only data processing. So
Understood.
The solutions is a DNA of our whole group because we came from management background.
Now, management and software technology, you fused the two, very Sanskrit of you. Sanskrit, you fuse words, huh? Sandhi Samas,
mm-hmm.
which means union of words. You built products in the 1980s itself.
Yeah.
And that was pioneering. Walk us through that journey.
Yeah. Very important question, Atul, because that was an era where only thing that was done was custom-made software. Customer told us what they want, and we designed a software.
Mm-hmm. Which so was very bespoke.
Very
I
bespoke.
Come to you,
yeah.
I say I need X, Y, Z, just like Procter & Gamble.
Yeah.
How do I solve my Vicks vapor up production problem?
Yeah.
And you figure out and you say, well, this is how you should produce optimal quantities at the right, at the opportune time.
Correct.
And then, of course, that is not replicable for someone else.
No, it is only programmed for them. Only they can use it. No one else can. So they have to pay full price for that whole program, which was expensive, even by standards that time. And what happened really, Atul, was there was an inflection point there where personal computer arrived on the scene. PC, as we all of us know now.
Yeah.
IBM PC was the first PC and then a lot of other things. But in India, also PCs got introduced. And there was a computer company which brought a computer at below 100,000 rupees, which was you know, important.
Extraordinary.
Extraordinary.
Because it brought costs down.
And then computers were cheaper, but very software. How do I use as a small business person anything by buying that computer? And that was an era we saw as an opportunity to build a solution which can be packaged and sold to hundreds and thousands and millions of customers. They just buy PC, put it on their PC and run it. And we were so fond of this solutions part. We, and I must say one of the colleague, Ketan Mehta, was so much fascinated by the stockbroker software where he was involved himself and also financial accounting. So, you know, we all sat together and decided to build product. And we were one of the first Indian company in 85 to launch software product.
And your first product was for the Bombay Stock Exchange.
Correct.
And it was for stockbrokers.
For the stockbrokers. Stockbrokers had very complicated way of trading software and it was all manual that time, you would guess. And here was something they could solve that problem very fast, and it became very popular and became number one package very soon. We didn't stop there. We came out with financial accounting because that was the next part. Again, directed at small and medium enterprises to be sold in hundreds and thousands and so on. But that was an era which popularized computerization in the country among smaller size companies. But we were not happy only with that. So we came out with what is called as enterprise resource planning package. We were more ambitious now. And we said, software export we have to do. We don't want to do custom-made software or, you know, send people to the customer sites in US and do software. We should have product because we were already successful in India. So we decided to build what is called an ERP. And mind you, ERP is something which was very, very new at that point of time.
In fact, you brought out an enterprise resource planning ERP product before SAP and before Oracle.
Yeah, yeah.
So that is extraordinary. How did you do so in India, in socialist India, ruled by Indira Gandhi, no less?
I know. So that's a good question. But the point, what happened really was we studied the what we call specifications for ERP through a person called Oliver White, who is very well known in US. We had access to that. We studied it. And my colleague Sundar and Sudhakar particularly were very keen and were driving that effort. And we built a software which was very unique because the concept of code generation for software was first time done, in the sense that you do not change the software by just changing the code, but you change something above the program and so on. Those were very unique concepts. And I'm very proud we did it. And it was a very successful product in India. But our vision was we will conquer this ERP world with our product globally. And to be honest, we were not successful.
Why?
We could not compete with Oracles and SAPs and other products at that time because they had a global presence. They had a venture capital probably of much larger size. They had a market access because they were companies in those countries. Mm-hmm. We were coming from India, which is not well known for software at that point of time. We don't have a muscle to compete and put that much money. Mind you, we did not have venture capital environment in India in as late as 1988, 90s.
Hmm. So you lacked capital. Yeah. And of course, you lacked market access.
Correct.
Because you were in India, the combination.
Combination. And we were one of the first companies, Atul, to get venture capital to build this product, by the way, which was very meager amount. If I tell you that amount, you will fall off the chair.
No, it was probably $10,000.
Something like that. Little bit more than that. But the point I'm making is, people today talk nothing less than $5 million of venture capital. But the point I'm making is, with that meager capital, because there was no concept of venture capital. Although, when we went IPO, this venture capital company multiplied their money 10 times in just 3 years. But that's a separate story. But the point I'm making is I'm feeling very proud that we created a new era in IT industry of those times by building products which were globally competitive, Atul. And that is a longer story. We'll talk later as we go along. But the point I'm making is I feel that our tryst with destiny, as one would call, was with solutions and products.
So you also did something extraordinary. You may have failed with the ERP software globally, but you implemented the City of London congestion charge, and there was no tags. There were no tags involved. You did it off the recognition of the number plate of the car.
Yeah.
So tell us, A, how did you get that contract, and B, how did you deliver on it?
Yes, that's an interesting story again. Remember, we had not done anything like this anywhere in the world or even in India. There was only one such system working in Singapore at that time. And that also wanted to be put some sensor on the car, etc.
And Singapore, with all due respect to Singapore, a fantastically successful country. But Singapore is a small town compared to London.
Yes. There are close to 200,000 cars come in the city from 100 or 200 roads, if you know the London.
I know London very well. I used to live there, and our chair, Claire Whittaker, still lives there. So I'm in London every year, part of the year.
So here is Indian company who doesn't have any track record of doing large projects, and also obviously doing any project of this kind. And we bid against very well-known large system integrators. And what we end up to the government, mayor of London, a complete prototype of how your system will work. Others could not show. So they said, oh guy, these guys know what they are doing. And why that happened, Atul, you know, again that same DNA, solutions. Our guys sitting in down, they said, oh, this is a problem. Let me sit and think through what solution I could do. And so they built a prototype.
You had a customer first approach.
Yeah, customer first approach, understanding customer problem, and then going back and building prototype. The prototype won, and obviously we said we will put cameras, we will identify nameplates. You don't have to put any tag on the car, so privacy is assured. Today, if you go to London, you are tracked only when you are in city. When you go out of city, you are out of the bounds of any surveillance, which was very much appreciated as a system. And you know, it's so difficult in London to get number plate recognized and all that. But mind you, this was a large, huge system with a public outcry saying that this will not work. If you go on, I think 19th March, I remember 2003 or 2002, there was an eerie silence in London when that first day of London congestion charging happened. Everyone said it will fail. You can't do this. You can't get car tracked like this. And they will pay at the end of the day a fine if they don't pay in advance. And mind you, they told us to do mobile payment system that time. Now it is very easy. 20 years ago, we built a mobile payment system instantaneously, almost within 2 months. So all of it was success. Everybody saw what Indian companies can do.
Exactly. I was at Oxford at that time. I'd resigned from the government.
Oh, I see.
I'd gone to do a second BA in philosophy, politics, and economics.
Oh.
So I remember reading a lot about this experiment.
I hope you had not paid any fine end of
paper. I was too poor. I only had a bicycle.
Bicycle were not covered.
Used to come into London by bus or train.
You know, there is a very interesting story here, if I have 1 minute.
You have more than a minute, sir. Shoot.
So, 2 months or 3 months after that rollout of the system, I go to London, get down at Heathrow, take a Paddington Express and go to Paddington, get down and take a cab to go to my hotel. So I ask cab driver, you know, what is new here? He says, oh, you don't know. There is whole congestion charging software here. I said, yeah, what does it do? He says, you know, it made my life so easier now. I have more time to move around because there are lesser cars here. I have more time to park my car anywhere. And I do more business. So then I, of course, had my commercial spiel. I said, you know who has done this? He said, oh, you guys have done the software. You know what he said when I dropped out of the cab? Sir, he said, I should not charge you today because you have made my day. And that was my real moment of joy and satisfaction that I made a difference to that cab driver.
Oh, that's a great story. That's a fantastic story. And you went on not just to implement the congestion charge, but you also built Spine for the NHS.
Yes.
And that was 60 million people.
Yeah.
So walk us through that story. It seems you did a lot of work for the UK.
Yes. We have been very lucky in a way to do real large government project for UK, and that the main beginning happened with this London congestion. Everybody knew about us. So the person who was in charge of this Spine project for NHS said, let's call this company. Let me understand. Of course, the project was very large. So we had to partner with British Telecom, and they did hardware and networking, and we did software part. And we jointly bid for project, and it was well fought project, and we won it. And it was about creating the whole data warehousing for electronic medical records of the country of UK. And that's why it was called Spine.
And of course, central. NHS's National Health Service, which the British government instituted after World War II. Everyone in the UK has free healthcare. Of course, it's paid for through some form of taxation. It is held as a model for many other countries, even though it has problems. And building that database for 60 million people must have been a gargantuan exercise. And it is a credit to the UK that they trusted you as an Indian company to do so.
Yes, I must say that I'm very so grateful to the UK as a country and public sector in particular for giving us that chance. In fact, when we entered UK in 1990, it was a UK government agency which helped us to find a partner.
And wow, that is extraordinary, because you cannot trust the Indian government to do anything for you.
So here was a government which was supporting a third country software company to succeed in their country. And mind you, in 1990s, nobody knew about India as a software. I had a hard time selling software to Britishers. They would very respectfully ask me, "You mean you develop software, is it?" So,
but this you delivered in 2008.
Yeah, this was in 2003, so much later.
Much later. But and so times had changed within 15, 16 years. You know, from going as nobodies, you were going as somebodies who had a track record of success.
Absolutely. And that was an era of Indian IT industry. That was the beginning of Indian IT industry's global dominance as you see now, those early 90s.
Brilliant. So this time we will talk about you, but also about you in the context of the extraordinary growth of the Indian software industry, which, as you've told me, went from $50 million to $200 billion. And that is a story which very few people know in detail outside the industry itself. So without further ado, tell us, how did this industry explode?
Yes, Atul, this is a story which requires a great mention in the Indian economic history, because it changed what people thought about India. It changed the foreign exchange situation in India. And it created a large middle class who were the employees of this industry, who were well-to-do later, who could create a prosperity around them. And beyond anything else, create an image of India as technology superpower. I think this is a story which is the dream that I lived, as I always say. And it starts, of course, way back in 1970s, right here in Mumbai, in a place called Santa Cruz Export Processing Zone, which were the early days of software export, because everyone was thinking that India has this tremendous capability in technology, and we have advantage in terms of numbers. We have advantage in terms of knowledge. We have advantage in terms of language, which is English. And of course, at benefit of a lower cost. This is a powerful combination to conquer the world. But the real era and, you know, takeoff happened sometime in 1988 when an organization called NASSCOM got founded.
So you were one of the founders of NASSCOM.
Yeah.
So who came up with the idea and how did it take off?
Oh, that's a story by itself. In those later part of 80s, everyone felt that if we really have to grow, we need to come together, work together to build the industry. It is not something that a company or two companies can do. So there is to be discussions happening in Bangalore. There is to be happening in Mumbai and Delhi and sometimes in San Francisco and Boston, when Indians met together there or people from here went there. But what really happened was there was a movement where we called a meeting of all the software entrepreneurs who were small companies that time. All of us were tiny by today's standards. A meeting in Delhi to decide what should be our future course of action, with the idea that we should form an organization. Mind you, at that time, there was another organization called MATE, which is Manufacturers Hardware Industries Association, and we were part of that association. And we felt that they cannot do a justice because they were focused on domestic industry hardware. We are about ex-software and outside India and so on. So we were far apart. So we decided in that meeting in Delhi that we need to form an association. And that was real beginning. And I'm lucky that I'm one of the person who was there at that time. But real work started after that. We came together, we wrote constitution, and most important, first 6-7 years are very, very tough in any institution. I have always a law of six. I say 6 years you have to work hard, you have to put up patience. It happened in Mastek also, because 6 years were tough. So 6 years all of us struggled, all of us who became early founding members. We worked hard to make it a successful.
So who were the founding members?
Yeah. So real people who ultimately spent their time and effort were Mr. Harish Mehta. I was involved, as I said, Mr. K.V. Ramani, Saurabh Srivastava. And Infosys team was very supportive from Nandan and later Mr. Narayan Murthy.
So Nandan Nilekani and Narayan Murthy
were also kind of supporting this whole effort. Mm. And they were helpful to this founding team. And I remember Infosys had even done some programs in IT to get some money which we can be used in NASCOM, because we were struggling in terms of association. That was the kind of sacrifice all of us did. We spent our own time, which we could have well spent in the company and brought company much above. But we decided we should work together for the industry.
So you spent your own time, money, and energy to create NASCOM.
Correct. That is most important story that you should know. Because we would compete in marketplace at, we will come together and see what is best for industry.
So it was a story in which you focused on the industry well-being and not just your narrow interests or just the interests of your company.
Yeah, I'll give you an example of that, Atul. Mastek, as you know, was building products. And we had built that ERP. And you had asked me why we were not...
Enterprise resource planning. And you built it before Oracle and SAP.
Yeah. And at that time, the duty on software was almost 100%. So Indian industry...
Duty where?
Import duty.
Where?
From US or UK, if you had to import software... You had to pay 100% duty.
Wow. So if you imported a software to use in India, your costs were double.
Double. And here was IT industry, which was struggling to grow because we did not have access to the best of the software. So it was in the interest of the IT industry that we reduce it and make it zero. We asked government that please make it zero. And everybody said, these IT guys, they have gone mad. They don't need protection. They will be completely killed by 0% duty because everybody will flood in software. But we said exactly we want flood in so that we can flood out, because we learn new technologies. Because IBM had gone out by that time, if you know. They were thrown out by the government. And we wanted new software.
Yeah, I mean, just to remind our listeners, India was going through extraordinary... leftward lurch. Indira Gandhi had amended the constitution through dubious means and declared we were a socialist country. By the way, the preamble still says we are a socialist country. In fact, I joke, we now follow Sanatan socialism. And not to single out Indira Gandhi, we must also remember that in 1977, the opposition that came to power under Morarji Desai, who of course, shared the last name with you, was equally left-wing, if not more, and that government kicked out Coca-Cola. So we went through this crazy period precisely at a time when China was opening up, when Deng Xiaoping said it doesn't matter if a cat is black or white as long as it catches mice. And in this period, bureaucrats, all sorts of bureaucrats, factory inspectors, labor inspectors, everyone basically came to inspect what you were doing and expected you to pay the government fee. And I was told by people in manufacturing that sometimes the government fee was just 500 rupees, but then you had to pay 1,000 on top. And there was just one counter in the bank where you could deposit it. And it was an entire Kafkaesque nightmare of the license, permit, and quota Raj. And the high priest of all was the Indian Administrative Service, the evil IAS, that decided they knew everything and they would decide everything and they would be the high priests of the economy. And so it was a crazy time for entrepreneurs. It was a crazy time for manufacturers. It was a crazy time for anyone running a business. And what you say is yet another manifestation of that craziness.
Yes. And here we were asking for something, which is liberalization at the highest level. But we, as a NASSCOM, stuck together, although Mastek as a product company suffered because ERP now became cheaper to import outside India than buy our software, which was called MAMIS. So it was good for the industry. Having said that, it may not be good for one company. So many decisions like that were taken where we saw larger interest of the country.
So for the national good, you made sacrifices.
Yeah, so I didn't oppose it. We didn't oppose that movement. I was part of that group which decided that we should have 0% duty. And I knew our product business would suffer because of it, but it's okay. So be it.
So, but you still had success. You built an enterprise resource management for insurance companies. I remember
yes.
You told me last time.
That journey is important.
The last time we met, ladies
yes,
and gentlemen.
I know, some time back. You have a good memory, as I said, Atul. So that story, of course, is an interesting story which should inspire Indians that although we didn't succeed in making a global product in that ERP, MAMIS as we used to call it, we made it a success 20 years later in a different situation.
In ERM.
In ERM, you can call it, which is basically enterprise resource planning for an insurance industry. So in 2001, we again made an effort that let's build something which we have as intellectual property, IP as we call it. And tell you, Atul, we had product which was looking like a product for insurance industry, but it was far away from being product and far away from being a global product. And insurance industry is different in each country. You have to have local versions, etc., etc. But to put long story short, we worked hard for almost 15 years to see it rolled out in multiple countries, starting from Singapore, Malaysia, to UK, and ultimately to US. We had to invest $200 million in that venture. And that $200 million venture was to get R&D investment in the company, get new companies, acquire new companies which fitted with the insurance product strategy. But by the end of 2015, we had a global product and we were one of the top three players in insurance industry in US, which no one else has done from Indian IT industry to make enterprise products so successful. That was a proud moment because we were so successful that we decided to separate that company into Majesco. So Mastek became two companies, Mastek and Majesco. And Majesco decided to list in New York Stock Exchange. So it was a proud moment.
And then NASDAQ.
And then later moved to NASDAQ. That was a proud moment because we could show that Indian product companies also can be a global company. Indian service companies were global by that time and they were all big names. All of them know. What was missing element was product, pure play software product company to be at that level in terms of success. And that was a Majesco story. So what we did not achieve earlier times. We are very proud that we achieved here. And that story moves ahead if you have some time.
No, no, please go ahead. I remember you said Tomo Bravo bought Majesco and took it private, and it returned money to shareholders. In fact, you gave 975 rupees of dividend per share, setting records in corporate governance in this country.
Yes, it was a very proud moment for us that all the money that we got after selling Majesco to Tomo Bravo, who were very interested because they thought that if it goes private, they can invest more money and take it still at a higher level, which it is going right now as we speak. Majesco is a separate entity doing extremely well in US, but we are no more owning it. But we got the money, and Majesco India shareholders, we returned the money through a dividend, which was a record dividend, and it was appreciated by various agencies as a good example of corporate governance, because we did not keep any money in the company. And that's what generally people say, that promoters keep money and then try to do some new ventures. We said, no, this is shareholders' money, return back.
And promoters in Indian parlance means those who start the company.
Yes,
and those
founders.
The founders.
Yeah.
And those who basically raise money and take the company to growth. In fact,
yeah,
India has unfortunately had many incidents of promoters stealing from their own company and from their own shareholders. So what Ashank did was extremely ethical and, dare I say, rather rare.
Thanks. Thanks, Atul, for those kind words. I feel good that we did it as founders of Majesco, and we could see smile on our shareholders' face that although they suffered because we are investing in Majesco for a long time and performance was not matching the returns they were expecting, but time came that we made India proud through building product and made shareholders successful through our return of money.
So now let me loop back to NASSCOM.
Yes.
And Kiran Deshpande, whom I met in Pune,
yeah,
one of your industry colleagues,
sure,
was talking about how Indian software industry set the example of middle-class people becoming entrepreneurs. No godfathers, no members of the lucky sperm club necessarily or at all. And this industry set standards for ethical business. Everything was above board. It paid taxes. It brought in export earnings. And as I just said earlier in the podcast, the industry went from $50 million to $200 billion. So tell us, how did this industry take off? Who were the key players, your colleagues, whom you admire? What were the drivers of growth?
Yes, that's a story which, as I said, I'm very proud that I have lived it and lived it as a dream, Atul. So to take that story forward of the industry, we made this through NASSCOM. Of course, we made a lot of changes which were supporting industry. You know, this whole concept of software technology park, which meant that you can develop software anywhere. And you don't have to go to a fixed place called export processing zone. We came and said, why we need export processing zone? We can do it anywhere. Please allow us to do it. And we had a very, very, very enlightened bureaucrats in Ministry of Electronics, as used to call it that time. One Mr. Whittal, whose name we want to gratefully mention here, was very supportive of industry, an IAS officer.
He was one of the rare forward-looking public-serving,
yeah,
IAS officers.
Yeah, I can give him as an example of what real industry promoters should be like. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, I will do whatever you want, but you ensure that you deliver your results. So he set a target of $400 million, which was very big amount that time for us. Without consulting us, he says, I have told Prime Minister that you will do 400 million. I will give you all this if you agree to it. He said, we fell from our chair. But the point I'm making is, we made changes working with the government and enlightened bureaucrats. So although everyone says that Indian IT industry did well because government did not know about the industry, which is really a half-truth. It is a fact that we were lucky to get certain bureaucrats and Department of Electronics to support us by making reforms in the way industry was operating. Mind you, as you said, it was an era of license raj. It was although liberalization happened by 91, things were looking better. But still, those were early days. It was not some, everything was so well. We still had constraints. We could not use our credit cards. We could not book air tickets from US. We could not get foreign exchange so easily to get out. I mean, you will laugh at some of the things that we were doing. First time when I went to get foreign exchange, I was told, why should we give you foreign exchange? Because you are not having any exports. So I said, sir, to do export only I want foreign exchange. How will I do foreign export unless you tell me to allow me to go abroad? Such was the government and regulations at that time.
So there was no trust really in the entrepreneurial class and the business class. The government operated with this very Stalinist distrust of anyone trying to do anything on their own.
Yeah. So in spite of that, thanks to, as I said, NASSCOM and some enlightened bureaucrats, we made changes in the way to liberalize our business life and brought a lot of changes. However, we were also extremely lucky to have first generation entrepreneurs coming to the industry. They were all highly educated people from middle class with value-based education and value-based behavior, so that they were running their companies as global companies and highly well-managed companies to set an example in Indian industry that what it means to be globally admired industry sector. And we were lucky that all of these new entrepreneurs which came in this industry were also as much enablers to make this industry from 500 million to 2,200 billion, which is 4,000 times growth. And I can mention many names.
So why don't you go ahead and mention some of the pioneers, fellow pioneers who were trailblazers of the software industry.
Yeah. So in those early 80s and late 80s and 90s, there were those enlightened entrepreneurs who came in the business. Some of the names are, of course, well-known. Infosys, which was also a team like us, started around same time and created an industry and a global corporation, which we all know and we admire Mr. Narayan Murthy as founder, chairman and CEO of the company and what history they have created. Then we have, of course, Mr. Azim Premji, who started IT industry, leaving his legacy of oil business behind and showed what an enlightened entrepreneur can also do based on professionalism. Then we had lucky, of course, to have Tatas getting into business, although not entrepreneurial in that sense, but it had a Tata's backing. So we had a Tata consultancy who has also done very well and made India proud about their achievements. And I can talk of many such names, but the point I'm making is it was those group of entrepreneurs and 30, 40 of them, if I have to recall all of them, who built. Some of them were extremely successful. Some of them may not be as successful. But the point is they created an environment of professionalism, hired large number of computer scientists. Not only that, we created an academia who was focused now on computer training and producing large number of such people, which we did not have. And for that, we had to, in NASSCOM, also had to work on creating degrees, working with academia, with MCA and things like that. And other thing that we did that time, all of us, was this focus on quality. Everybody said, Indian IT industry is fine, but they are not best of the quality. You have to come to America. So what we did was, there was a what is called as SEI level given to every software company. And this was done by Carnegie Mellon University. So they had level 1 to 5. So 5 is the best. And can you believe me? At one time, almost 80 to 90% of SCI level 5 companies came from India. And that journey started in mid-80s, 87, 88, and by 92, 93, we were capital of SCI 5 level companies. And everybody then stopped questioning us that we are having a low-quality software. So there were journeys like that which was done by entrepreneurs, by investing in people, investing in processes, investing in governance, investing in professional approach to business. So I have been lucky to be along with them in NASSCOM, working with all of them and seeing how we can create industry, which is a global class now, which is almost beyond 200 billion as of now. But most importantly, is respected for what it is globally. And that is a journey of NASSCOM on one hand and industry players on another hand coming together and jointly charting that path, Atul.
This is fascinating because what you're saying is that the combination of people, processes, professionalism and governance really helped create the ecosystem. And that ecosystem led to this phenomenal success.
Yeah. And as I said again, each of these founder members that I talked, we were lucky to get felicitated by Prime Minister for our efforts many years later, 25-year celebration of NASSCOM, have put their own time, money and effort. For example, there was a time when nobody knew about Indian IT industry in Asia-Pacific countries. There are 20, 25 countries there, as you know. I, as a NASSCOM board member, went to Australia, putting my own money and time to promote NASSCOM and become member of ASOCIO. ASOCIO is Asia Oceanic IT Industry Association, where Japan to Australia and India to, you know, Philippines are members. And that movement helped us to get established as a respected player because we were very small in those 90s, as I told you, 50 million.
And you went on to be chairman.
Yeah, I went on. I was lucky to be a chairman of the institution. But all of this happened, why? Because we loved that industry has to grow. There are instances, Tul, where a person from another company has done a presentation for their competitors when they became part of NASSCOM. Can you believe that? Such was the enlightened group that we had. And so compete in marketplace, cooperate to make industry larger. That was the mantra. And that was the team building. Even today, although almost 35 years have passed since we started NASSCOM, we still are very close friends, the original founder group and others. And we meet every year in a retreat and celebrate with our families. And that is the teamwork.
So a mix, a healthy mix of competition and cooperation got you so far.
Yes.
So now you've talked about the success of the industry. You've talked about how you were able to set standards in corporate governance. One of the interesting things about this industry is that it has given back to society. You yourself, for instance, have set up the Ashang Desai Center for Policy Studies. I believe this is at IIT Bombay. And then you've set up the Ashang Desai Center for Leadership and Organizational Development. This is at IIM Ahmedabad.
Yes.
So, and of course, you were vice chair of Mumbai First. You want to improve governance. You work on AI and public policy. You work on water. You were instrumental in setting up the Pan IIT India Association. You've done a lot. Abul Kalam was chief guest as well, the late president, the great president.
Yes.
He was at a conference involving 5,000 alumni.
Yes.
So question for you, does this come from your background as the son of freedom fighters, or rather from Scion? I mean, your aunt, your uncle, your parents, everyone fighting for independence against the Portuguese, Or was it also because you had the advantage of basically a free education in IITs and you rose up because of that education you wanted to give back? Walk us through what led you to these endeavors.
Yeah, actually, as you rightly said, it is both of those things. The values that your parents and your family members create in you is the greatest driver of your life. And we all the time underestimate it. The values that imbibed in me through my mother working hard herself with a meager salary, at standing up as a tall, ethical lady. I remember a day when she came crying and I was such a small kid. I said, "Why are you crying?" He said, "There was a person who came and said, do this for me, I'll pay you some money." She was crying. "How can I do all this? Is the government service for this?" Now, those are the values of giving back to society and standing upright are in your mind and they become your driver. So that is at one level. The second level, as you rightly said, we have been very lucky to study in these best institutions like IITs and IIM at very meager fees. Society has paid for us. And that's what happened, Atul, when that Abdul Kalam event that I had organized, where 5,000 IITians, largest ever IITian event in the history of IIT, happened in Mumbai, right here. And he came and said, "You guys have got best of education, best of the environment to learn. What are you doing to giving back to the country?" And that was so inspiring, sitting next to him in that hall and listening to him was so much profound to me. So I said, we should do something back for society. And tell you, Atul, out of that event, there are a lot of IITians came together and started NGOs or not-for-profit. And one of them I am involved since founding days is called Pan IIT Reach for India, which is doing skill building in Jharkhand and now in Madhya Pradesh and many other states with a joint venture with government. And it's a not-for-profit. We don't make any money out of it. We get donation, we get government help. It's a great example of how government and private can come together.
Public-private partnership.
Yeah, this is an example.
And you train welders, construction workers, drivers.
Yeah, and nurses. And now nurses.
Yeah.
And we are now building also what we call ITIs, Kaushal Colleges in Jharkhand.
ITIs are Indian Technology Institutes.
Indian Technical Institutes.
Technical Institutes. And they
ITIs,
train
skilled
workers.
The skilled workers.
Yeah.
We have produced thousands and thousands of them over the last 10 years. Or I work with another organization in founding days, which is making them train the poor student to get into IITs and medical colleges through a technology-based training. Or I do some work for building leadership among girl children. I was very unlucky to lose my daughter at a very young age. So in her memory, I said, let me build leaders like her that she was. And we have trained almost 50,000 girls in the country today in a program which is 5 months program in the schools. So things like that I do only to give back to society. And one of those give backs were the two institutions that you have mentioned at IIT Bombay for public policy and leadership and organization OD Institute in IIM Ahmedabad. So it's a very interesting story. People ask us, why did I start public policy school? So if you have heard...
You studied technology. You didn't study philosophy, politics and economics at Oxford.
Not at all. In fact, I didn't cherish studying politics and philosophy. Somehow I thought I should be only studying mathematics and science like all good people at that time. Yeah. So, but I realized what an influence by professionals on government can make change happen through NASSCOM. The story that I described you, how NASSCOM was working with government to make change happen.
Yeah.
I could see that. Even in this new work that I do for the PARFI, how government can be enlightened if we work with private sector. So we need to create professionals to build this public policy, which is what this institute is doing. And it was my give back to IIT, of course. And as I was involved in making it happen, that school many years ago, and that is very satisfying.
So the goal of that school is to create people who go into politics, who eventually then draft legislation, come up with policies, and improve the lot of the nation.
Yes, I hope these people who pass out from there will go either in government or in NGOs or maybe politics if they think so, and create a class of professional cadre of professionals who are tomorrow's leaders in society for driving government and politics.
Brilliant, Ashang Desai. It's been an honor speaking with you. You've spared your valuable time and come all the way to see me in Mumbai. I hope to be back in Mumbai. I hope to see you again. And the next time you're in the US, and I travel a lot, or perhaps in the UK, keep me posted. We'll have you for another podcast. Thank you very much, sir.
Thanks. You are doing a great job of doing this podcast with people whom I listen and get inspired. So please continue your great work that you are doing and wish you a great success.
Thank you very much.